Good day, everybody. My name is Syed Sattar. It is my distinct pleasure today to introduce our speaker, Dr. Shaib Mayard from Cardiff University in Wales. I have known Shaib for a number of years now, and we are also collaborating on several projects with regards to our research. Shaib is among the outstanding proteges of Professor Denver Russell, and I think it's most appropriate for someone like him to be giving this memorial lecture. I invite Shaib to address us.
Well, thank you very much, Sattar, for this very kind introduction. Good afternoon or good morning, everybody. It is my real pleasure to have been asked to give this memorial teleclass lecture today on the sporicide on potential failure to decontaminate. If you would like to turn to the first slide, please. The first slide is showing the picture of Denver Russell. And Denver Russell was extremely well known in the field of disinfections on antimicrobials. He worked all his life in that field, except right at the beginning where he was working on antibiotics. And he has contributed to many books on the subject of biocides on the efficacy, mechanism of actions against various microorganisms. Now, this lecture is certainly topical, as Denver Russell, one of his first book was on sporicide, on really looking at the spore structures. And that was about 40 years ago. Next slide, please. So my objective today is to give you a very brief but thorough understanding of sporicide. And to do that, I need to go through a number of points on especially looking at the spore structure, on the latest information on spore structures, looking at the efficacy of microbicides, again the spores, also called the sporicides, but also looking at the conditions that will affect efficacy, and reflect on those conditions, especially when we're going to employ them on environmental surfaces. Then I will also talk about a sort of a new way to apply sporicide, which is by the medium of sporicidal wipes. And in Europe and the US and Australia, those sporicidal wipes product are thriving, and there are quite few issues about the efficacy of some of those. And toward the end of this presentation, so hopefully after I've given you a very good understanding of sporicide, I will discuss very briefly the risks associated with sporicide failure and what we can do to minimize those risks. Next slide, please. Now, it is appropriate to start this lecture by reflecting on the susceptibility of microorganisms to disinfections. On this slide is an updated slide of the Spalding classifications. 30 years ago, this scientist looked at the efficacy of microbicides for surface disinfections on the susceptibility of microorganisms to those microbicides. And he had divided their susceptibility into three groups. And the groups the most susceptible to biocides are at the bottom of the slide in blue, where we can find the gram-positive microorganisms, envelope viruses, and protozoa. And for those microorganisms, what we need is what's called low-level disinfection. So that means some very mild disinfectants, phenolics and biguanides, will be able to kill those microorganisms. In the middle of this slide, where we've got intermediate level disinfections, then we've got a range of microorganisms from mycobacteria, non-envelope viruses, protozoal cysts, some gram-negative microorganisms on fungi, and those are slightly more resilient to disinfections. And at the top of this slide, then we've got the bacterial spores on the agent responsible for the transmissible degenerative encephalopathy, the prions. On those two entities, prions and spores, are the most resistant, I guess, organisms to disinfections. Therefore, if we want to achieve sporicide or sporicidal effect, then we need to have a chemical that will be rather active to be able to kill the spores. Next slide, please. So therefore, in terms of what is known about sporicides or chemical that will kill the spores, then we've got mainly two group of agents. We've got the alkylating agents, such as ethylene oxide, glutaraldehyde, formaldehyde, and to some extent, or in certain condition, ophthalaldehyde, which will only have some mild sporicidal activity at elevated temperature. And those agents are usually what's called a slow sporicide. So it will take some time to achieve sporicidal activity to kill spores, and we will see that later on. And then we've got the oxidizing agents, and among the oxidizing agents, we've got the hydrogen peroxide, peracetic acid, chlorine dioxide, ozone, but we've got also the chlorine-releasing agents, such as sodium hypochlorite, and sodium dichloroazocyanurate, chloramine T. Now, there's one additional agent that is not on this slide, which have been shown to have some sporicidal activity, and that is of povidone iodine. Next slide, please. Now, the characteristic of those alkylating agents or oxidizing agents, they are usually considered as highly reactive compounds, and they are all used for high-level disinfections. Next slide, please. Now, the next few slides I'm going to show you is a resume or a summary from what is known about the efficacy of those different agents against a wide range of spore-forming bacteria, either the bacillus or clostridium, and looking really at what sort of a reductions or kill rate we can get in a very specific amount of time. For example, here we've got the formaldehyde, we've got different spores formers, Bacillus subtilis globigii to Bacillus cereus. You've got the concentrations of the formaldehyde is being used, the log reduction being achieved with that concentration on the time to achieve that concentration. Next slide, please. Now, if you notice on the right-hand side of the column, then you need quite a large amount of time to be able to achieve really probably a 99.999% reduction in number, or in other words, a 5-log reduction in number. Also, what you can notice, if you go to the next slide, is depending on the spore formers, then we've got different efficacy of the specific biocides. For example, here in red, we've got 4-formaldehyde, depending on the spores, if it's from Bacillus anthracis, Bacillus cereus, or Aegiobacillus stereothermophilus, then at 2% concentration, to achieve a 5-log reduction, it needs between 1 hour and 24 hours to achieve that same log reduction. So here I want to introduce again the concept of different types of spores will have different susceptibility to the sporicide. Next slide, please. That's the same sort of principle that apply to oxidizing agents. In this very complex, I guess, table, I listed the efficacy of hydrogen peroxide, peracetic acid, chlorine dioxide. And next slide, if you look on the right-hand side column, again, you will notice to achieve quite a high log reductions in spores following exposure to those different type of agents that you will need quite a very long contact time. On this, you need to bear in mind when we're going to talk about environmental surface disinfections. Next slide, please. Now, what is also quite surprising for those very highly reactive biocides, even at very high concentrations, is some spores are highly resilient. And those, I highlighted those numbers in red, for example, for Bacillus subtilis globigii at 10,000 ppm, 100,000 ppm of hydrogen peroxide, you've got only 3-log reduction in 30 minutes. with peristic acid on surface tests, that means the spores are being dry on the surface, then we not even achieve a 6 log reduction within 30 minutes at 300 ppm of peristic acid. The same with Bacillus anthrophilus, with peristic acid right at the bottom, with quite a high concentration of peristic acid, it's very difficult to achieve more than 3 log reductions within 10 minutes. Again, the concept of different spore formers or different spores from different microorganisms will have different susceptibility to the same type of biocide. Next slide, please. Now, there are some information on a new type of oxidizing agent like superoxidized water, which is really used for disinfections of potable water now. And there's indication that superoxidized water does have a sporicidal activity against quite a wide range of spores, and here from Bacillus subtilis to Clostridium difficile spores, where you can see in this slide they all achieved a 5 log reduction between 3 to 30 minutes. Now here I've added a number of publications from which all those tables are derived from. Next slide, please. Now the largest number of informations about sporicidal activity we have is with the halogen, and especially sodium hypochlorite. Sodium hypochlorite is highly used for, the healthcare environment for surface disinfections. Again, here you can see on the right-hand side, except for on one occasion, then the time to achieve quite a high number of killing spores, you will need between 5 to, in this case, one case, 180 minutes to achieve a 5 log reduction in those spores concentrations. And those, again, time needed to kill the spores is very important when we're talking about environmental disinfections. Now, on one occasion, that first red number you have on the right-hand side, it takes only 30 seconds to kill 5 log of spores with a sodium hypochlorite. But as you can notice on this slide here, but that's suspension test. And here I want to introduce another concept, which is the testing of sporicidal activity. You've got loads of different tests that are available. Some are surface tests, and others are suspension tests. The surface test, you've got the spores attached on the surface, and you apply the disinfectant onto them. On the suspension test, you've got the spores in the solutions of disinfectant. And by large, the suspension tests are less stringent as a test method to look at sporicidal activity. And in terms of product testing, those companies that are using suspension tests usually have much better results in terms of demonstration of activity than companies that will use a surface test to look at sporicidal activity. And I guess this concept of test protocol is very important, and we'll come back to that later on in this talk. Next slide, please. Now, on this slide, I want to introduce two concepts. The first one is the concentrations of sporicide, in this case of sodium hypochlorite, but also the formulation concept as well. And in this slide, you can see that we've got different type of formulation called acidified bleached or regular bleached, different concentrations, on the time taken for those different formulations to achieve a 6 log reduction in number. Next slide, please. As you can see highlighted in red, then the time to achieve the same number of spore kill varies depending on the different populations, on the spores that are being disinfected. Next slide, please. If we looked at the concentration effect, basically if you increase the concentration, in this case from 1000 ppm of available chlorine to 5000 ppm of available chlorine, to achieve the same log reduction, you will decrease tremendously the time taken to achieve that log reduction. So for example, with the Bacillus subtilis spores, from a concentration of 1000 ppm sodium hypochlorite, you will take about 20 minutes to achieve 6 log. If you increase that concentration to 5000 ppm, it will decrease that contact time to achieve 6 log to 5 minutes. Again, this is quite an important concept, especially when we're looking at a valuable product for a environmental decontamination or environmental disinfections of spores. Next slide, please. The second concept is the formulation, or the importance of formulations for sporicide. Here it compares an acidified bleach with a normal regular bleach, and you can see by looking at the numbers with different arrows, then the acidified bleach is far more active than the regular bleach. In another way, it takes a much shorter contact time to achieve the same log reductions in spores when you've got an acidified bleach. Next slide, please. Now, at least in Europe, you have lots of debates or lots of usage about what is called a deep clean, which make use of vaporized hydrogen peroxide or oxidizers. However, there's quite not many information on the efficacy of vaporized oxidizer on the effect of spores. And on this slide, you've got some information on such activity. And again, as you can see, that you can achieve with hydrogen peroxide vapor quite a large reduction in spore numbers, but the contact time, depending on the product, varies from 8 minutes to 2 hours. Next slide, please. Now, what makes the spores so resilient to all those highly reactive biocides? Well, it's all to do with the structure of the spores. And on this slide, you've got an electron microscopy of the Clostridium difficile spores, on which you can distinguish different parts of the spores. The first one is called the exosporium. Not all the Clostridium difficile spores will have an exosporium. And what is interesting with the exosporium is that most virulent Clostridium difficile will have the exosporiums that enable them to attach better to the surface to cause aggregations with the different spores. And in a very, well, at least in one instance, then the exosporium is linked with the presence of degradative enzymes for oxidizing agents. The next structure you can see is the spore coats. And the spore coats are a barrier to biocides, and we'll explain that in the next slide. Then you've got the cortex. And the new information about the cortex is it is a barrier to biocides, but what it does, it adds a physical pressure to the spore inner membrane. Now, the inner membrane is a normal cytoplasmic membrane. It's highly compressed, and because it is highly compressed, it will effectively be a barrier to biocides and to rehydrations. And then you've got the spore core. Now, the spore core is highly dehydrated, so it contains very little water. It contains a high level of calcium. And it contains some small acid-soluble proteins. And the small acid-soluble protein confer protections to the spore nucleic acid. Now, because you've got a very low water content, then the spore core can be described as sort of a gluey environment. And in this environment, you're going to have very little movement of the different enzymes and proteins you're going to have in that spore core. And because you've got little movement, then you've got resistance of the spores to, for example, heat. Next slide, please. Now, on this slide, it's a diagram of the different spore structures, and it'll give you some information as to the role of the spore structure in resistance to various biocides, or various microbiocides. And that was the work of Denver Assault, but also some colleagues like Peter Setlow on Satar here. So, for example, we find that the spore coats, if we remove the spore coats, then we restore activity to all those biocides on your left-hand side, such as hypochlorite, chlorine dioxide, glutaraldehyde, iodine, and so on. If you damage the cortex, again, we can, or if we, looking at the cortex effect on biocides, we can see that the hypochlorite and chlorine dioxide, iodine, chlorhexidine, potentially, are affected by the cortex. With the spore coat, it is very well known now that hydrogen peroxide will lose activity because of those small acid-soluble proteins. And finally, as I mentioned with the exosporium, It has been mentioned at least in one occasion that in one scientific paper that the exosporium in one Bacillus subtilis contains some enzyme that will be able to degrade hydrogen peroxide, so potentially contributing to the spore resistance. Next slide, please. So in terms of really mechanism of resistance of the spores, except for the exosporia, when we talk about degradations of the active, the biocide, it's all to do with inaccessibility to the target site. And this is key for the spore resistance to biocides. Next slide, please. Now, for a more practical matter, why do we want to use a sporicide? Well, basically to prevent the transmission of the spores from the environment to, I guess, the patient or to the healthcare worker, and prevent the transmission of the spores from medical devices. Now, when we're looking at the use of a sporicide, I mean, the preventing transmission from patients to patients, healthcare worker to patient, from visitor to patient, here we're talking about hand hygiene. Next slide, please. And in this case, then with existing hand hygiene, the spores are not killed, but they are removed from the hand when we're looking at washing hands with soap or water. It might be quite different with all those new hand rubs or hand gels products, and we'll talk about that in a minute. In terms of medical devices, single-use items, you don't need, obviously, disinfectants. There's been lots of a change in usage as well of some devices like thermometers where they don't really, or you're decreasing the risk of having spore contaminants. For a number of devices like blood pressure cuffs, then you probably wipe those devices so the spores are removed but not killed. Next slide, please. So therefore, when we're really looking at sporicide usage, we're looking at the prevention of the spores transmission from the environment, the hands, and the transmissions or the presence of spores to on medical devices such as endoscopes. Next slide, please. So to summarize what I've just said, the use of sporicides really is to prevent the contaminations of surfaces or the transmissions of spores from contaminated surfaces to patients or to healthcare workers. Now here I put the antimicrobial surfaces. Now a large number or an increasing number of surfaces claim to have antimicrobial activity, but as far as I know, none of them claim to have sporicidal activity. So when we're talking about preventions of transmissions of spores from surface to patient or healthcare workers, we're looking at surface disinfections with liquid, but also looking at antimicrobial wipe, or in this case, sporicidal wipes. Next slide, please. Now, the problem with using a sporicidal product is you have quite a number of factors that will affect the activity of those sporicidal product. First of all, you've got factors that really derive from the product. Next slide, please. Such as concentrations of the active, the type of surface you're going to disinfect, the presence of organic load, the temperature of the surface, the pH of the product, on the contact time, which is very important, that you're going to use. Next slide, please. And then you've got factors inherent to the microorganisms, that the target microorganisms to destroy, to kill. Next slide, please. Where the type of microorganism, the numbers, their phenotype, that means how metabolically active they are, on the location of those microorganisms is important. Next slide, please. Now, very often what I see is, when I've got company talking to me, is if you do not understand clearly the effect of those factors on the sporicidal product, what you're going to have effectively in practice is a decrease in activity of those product and therefore a failure of disinfection. Next slide, please. To give you some examples of factors or a bit more details, to me, in terms of when talking about sporicidal activity, you've got four main factors to consider. Concentration of the active, the type of surface to disinfect, the presence or not of organic load, and for example, in the hospital environment, when we're talking about Clostridium difficile spores, we know that they are released in large numbers with high amount of soiling, like feces, on vomit. And then you've got the contact time, and the contact time is very important for a surface infection, especially liquid. And as I've demonstrated in my other slides, is that you need quite a long contact time to achieve a high sporicidal activity. In practice, in a very busy healthcare environment, it's very not reasonable to assume that you're going to have a 30-minute contact time between your liquid disinfectant on the surface. It's more likely to be within only few minutes or even few seconds. Now, relative humidity at the bottom of the slide is very important for gaseous biocides on looking, for example, vaporized hydrogen peroxide. Next slide, please. In terms of microorganisms or factors inherent to the microorganisms, as we know, the spores are highly resilient or highly resistant to biocides. The number is usually difficult to predict, but you know, in terms of a outbreak of Clostridium difficile, that the patient will shed quite a large number of spores, and I'll show that again in a few slides. The phenotype, so the metabolic activity, is very important, and with the spores are dormant, they've got no metabolic activity, so they will be even more resilient to a biocidal activity. And the locations is for some type of microorganisms in tissues. Next slide, please. So therefore, controlling environmental parameters for me is absolutely paramount, and to understand that, those parameters. And here I want to just talk briefly about three parameters: temperature, relative humidity, and soiling. And those parameters will affect the efficacy of your sporicide, especially on surfaces. Now, I'm not talking about medical devices in this case. Now, we know that normally on surfaces, the surfaces are dried, and to have or to achieve activity, then you will need to have a liquid interface between your target microorganism, in this case the spores, on the biocides. Without that liquid interface, you're not going to have any activity at all. The type of surfaces we're talking about, we're talking from door handles, bed rails, bed frames, cupboards, trolley, wall panels, and so on and so forth, and I probably missed quite a few here. Next slide, please. Now, what's part of an investigation we've conducted in Cardiff over a one-year period is to understand better the environment in our local hospitals. And we've done measuring of air temperature and surface temperature over a one-year period in different departments in that local hospital. And those graphs reflect those temperature, and you can see, well, at least here in Cardiff in the UK, the temperature, either the air temperature or the surface temperature, varies between around 20 to 25 degrees. And that will have, again, an effect when we're talking about sporicidal activity on the way they are being tested in practice by companies. Next slide, please. Relative humidity, again, is important to consider. And as you can see, surprisingly, it is quite dry. You've got about 30% or up to 60% in during the summer. That gives you an indication about the very nice summer we've got in Britain. Again, that is very important to consider when we're looking at a residual effect of a biocide on surfaces. Now, surface bioburden is very important, and this does vary a lot between different departments within the hospitals, and you've got also seasonal variations of that surface bioburden. But by and large, then we can consider like normal surfaces, like door handle and so on, to be contaminated or potentially contaminated with quite a large number of bioburden. Next slide, please. So what is the effect practically of those different factors on sporicide? And here I give you an example whereby we're looking at sodium dichloroisocyanurate activity against spores of Bacillus subtilis with no soiling, or with, for example, 2% blood and 4% blood. And as you can see on this slide, to achieve the same number of reduction in spores, then with soiling, you will have to increase the contact time tremendously from 5 minutes to 45 minutes. And for certain type of formulations, still containing the sodium dichloroisocyanurate, then at 4% blood, or even 2% blood, you do not achieve any reduction in number. So again, that demonstrates again the importance of soiling in the activity of sporicide. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates again the importance of surface type on sporicidal activity. And in red are a log reduction achieved on porous surfaces compared to the number in black, where you've got non-porous surfaces. And you can see that with those different, with hydrogen peroxide vapor, for example, but also with superoxidized water, then you do not achieve a high reduction in number when we look at the infection of porous surfaces. To some extent, it's also true with the comparison between stainless steel and PVC. You're going to have some differences in activity of the sporicides. Next slide, please. Now, with Clostridium difficile, very briefly, Clostridium difficile, as name indicates, is a very difficult microorganism to grow. And some of the Clostridium difficile will not produce high number of spores. And depending on the where the microorganism grow and the spores are produced, you can have a difference in susceptibility. And again, this will impinge on the way those tests are conducted against Clostridium difficile spores. Next slide, please. Now, until now, all the data I've shown you are from studies that have been conducted in vitro. Now, the next part of this talk is what do we know about studies that have been conducted in situ, so really in the healthcare environment. And for those studies, I've really looked at the disinfection of Clostridium difficile in the healthcare environment. And the first part of this talk is, again, to demonstrate or to reiterate that a Clostridium difficile can be found easily in the environment. It can be found on floors, commodes, toilet, bedpan. It can survive for a very long period of time. And the Clostridium difficile infection incidence can be correlated to the prevalence of spores in wards. And all those, I guess, environments are subjected to sporicides. One question can be is, why do we have so many spores remaining in those environments? Next slide, please. Now, in one in situ study in particular, the one conducted by Wilcox et al. In 2003, it was a comparative study in two elderly medicine wards where two types of approaches have been conducted using either hypochlorite infection, so sporicide, against a neutral detergent that might remove the spores but will not kill the spores. So quite a large number of samples were analyzed. A prevalence of Clostridium difficile spores was found. But the important part of the study concluded that in this case, there was no difference in the prevalence of C. difficile, whether the detergent of the sodium hypochlorite usage was used overall. However, in one ward, and only one ward out of the two, there was a significant decrease in Clostridium difficile in incidence from 8.9 to 5.3 cases per 100 admissions. Now, this, in this case, worked in one ward, but was not reproducible to the other ward. And this highlights really the difficulty we have as scientists to set up, in situ investigations and to interpret the results of those investigations when we look at an intervention to combat, for example, in this case, Clostridium difficile infections. Now, the differences between the two wards in terms of C. diff infection might possibly explain by a number of additional confounding factors in this case, such as the cleaning efficiency wasn't really described in that paper. We don't know anything about the patient's types, the antibiotic prescribing, and especially the antigens. And all those confounding factors will reflect or will affect the results from such a study. Next slide, please. But overall, there's an agreement that even if you've got intervention with, in this case, sodium hypochlorite, you're going to, might have a decrease in CDI, but you're still going to find a contamination of the surfaces with clostridium difficile, and no matter what the approach that being adopted in those different in different studies highlighted in this slide. Next slide, please. Now, this makes a difference between environmental study on, for example, medical devices studies. And for example, with endoscopy, there's no report of C. difficile of endoscope or C. difficile transmission from following endoscope disinfections. However, we know that contamination of endoscope with Clostridium difficile can occur, but again, there's no report of a transmission following the infection. Next slide, please. Now, in terms of when I talked about earlier on the transmissions of Clostridium difficile spores from hand to hand, there's now a huge usage of those alcohol-based hand rubs. In those studies here listed in that table, then again it clearly demonstrates that those alcohol is not a sporicide, it will not kill the spores. And with that in mind, therefore, the use of alcohol-based hand rubs to try to get rid of Clostridium difficile spores will not work. And the results of those interventions are very clear that the use of hand rubs does not work against C. diff spores. Next slide, please. Now, in terms of intervention with hypochlorite disinfectant, there has been a number of in-situ studies. I mentioned one of them, Wilcox et al. In 2003. There's been another two, all mentioned in that excellent review from Hsu et al. In 2010, and in all those studies, then we have a reduction of cases per patient day. So it does work, but it does not eliminate the Clostridium difficile incidence. Next slide, please. The same with hydrogen peroxide vapor. There's been only one in-situ study looking at the effect of hydrogen peroxide vapor against a Clostridium difficile incidence, and again you can see the results of those interventions worked quite well, a reduction of 2.28 cases to 1.28 cases per 1,000 patients, so it's clearly worked very well, but it does not really eliminate the Clostridium difficile incidence. Now, further with that study, when all rooms were vacated by patients, not necessarily patients with C. diff, then by applying the hydrogen peroxide vapor overall for the hospital, for all those rooms vacated, then the after interventions, the number of cases of CDI cases were very low. Next slide, please. So where we are so far? So far I talked about a liquid disinfection, vaporized hydrogen peroxide disinfection, and trying to reduce C. difficile incidence. Now, the other type of product I want to talk about is those sporicidal wipes, those product, those new type of product that are increasingly used to try to decontaminate or even disinfect the environment, especially the environment proximal to patients. Now, we've been involved for a number of years looking specifically at those type of product, and with this slide is the results of observation we've done, again, in local hospitals, whereby we're looking at the ICU, on the way those antimicrobial wipes were used. And this table shows that the time of application is very low, between 4 seconds to 10 seconds, the application of the wipes on the surfaces. And most importantly as well, those wipes were used, the same wipe was used on different surfaces. Now, when we investigated further the activity of those wipes against microorganisms, then it was very clear that there is no standard test to look at the activity of those wipes. Next slide, please. So we had to devise our own standard to look at the activity of those wipes. Personally, for me, the wipes product might be very good at using, but the primary role of the wipes is to remove bioburden on microorganisms, or in this case spores, from the surfaces. And then for those wipes, to prevent the transfer of those bioburden from the wipes to other surfaces. And therefore, we set up those what's called a three-stage protocol, where we're looking at bacterial removal, or in this case, spore removal from the surfaces, the bacterial transfer, but also we looked at antimicrobial activity of the wipe itself. Next slide, please. And we studied it a couple of years ago, a number of sporicidal wipes, or wipes that claim sporicidal activity. And here you've got those in that table. And among all those wipes, only one wipes, that the first one at the top, highlighted in red, has a biocide, a microbicide, that has potentially sporicidal activity. All the other wipes, from B to G, do contain a biocide. Most of them are quaternary ammonium compounds that are known not to have a sporicidal activity, but to have a sporistactic activity, therefore just stopping germination of the spores. But they will not kill spores. But still, you can see that all those manufacturers of those wipes were claiming for a sporicidal activity. Next slide, please. So testing our three-stage protocols, what we looked, first of all, is the sporicidal effect of those wipes. And in the first column, at 10-second contact time, which reflects where the wipes are used in practice, you can see three numbers in red, which achieve a 90% reduction in the spores on the wipes. After 5 minute contact time, you can see none of the wipes but the sodium hypochlorite wipes at the bottom, which contain 5,000 ppm sodium hypochlorite. So none of the wipes at 5 minute contact time achieved a sporicidal activity except for the positive control, the one containing sodium hypochlorite, on wipe A, which has a sporicidal agent. Next slide, please. So how do we reconcile that discrepancy between 10-second contact time and 5-minute contact time? As I mentioned to you, all the other wipes, B to G, contain a sporistatic biocide, which, on the weather sporistatic biocide, is there attached very strongly to the surface of the spores and will prevent the spores from germinating and to form a colony. And by doing so, then it is impossible to really look at, or it is impossible for the spore to form a colony, and because we're looking at colony to look at the activity of the sporicide, then we have, with that sporistatic activity, we have a reduced number of colonies and a apparent a kill on the spores. So, what we have here, again, more importantly, is only two wipes having a sporicidal activity after 5 minute contact time. Next slide, please. Now, with our test, a very important part, as I said, for me, the wipes, the most important aspect of the wipes is to be able to remove bioburden from surfaces. And with our test, when we're looking at how efficient those wipes are to remove bioburden, you can see that it varies quite a lot between the wipes. Only one wipe were able to achieve 4 log removal of spores from the surfaces. All the other wipes were quite poor. Only 3 of them achieved a 1 log reduction from surfaces. Now, at the same time, all the wipes but one transfer the spores from the wipe itself to a different surfaces. And that is quite, again, a worrying aspect when you consider that a single wipe can be used on different surfaces. So what I'm saying here, if the wipes are removing some of the spores from the surfaces but are releasing the spores from the wipes, then when you're going to use that wipe on different surfaces, you're going to release a number of spores. Next slide, please. The release of the spores is explained by the interactions of the spores with the wipe material. On this slide shows some electron micrograph of different wipes, wipe A, B, and J, And at the top is the control wipe, so it's the material without the spores. At the bottom, it's the spore, the wipes inoculated with the spores. And as you can see, wipe A, you have a very tight interaction between the spores and the wipes. With wipe B and G, you can see those aggregate of spores, but very loosely attached to the wipe material. That really correlate very well with the results we've seen in terms of transfer of spores between surfaces, whereby wipe B and G were transferring spores between surfaces. Next slide, please. Now, so far, there's been only one really in-situ study looking at the usage of wipe in terms of reductions of Clostridium difficile. And that's been published last year. And this study occurred over a four-year period, where the first 2 years they were using their normal based cleaning regimen that did not include the use of wipes. And then a change was introduced where the sporicidal wipes were introduced. And again, you can see the numbers speaks for themselves. The mean Clostridium difficile rate in those wards decreased tremendously after the introduction of those sporicidal wipes. Now, what is very important to realize here is the sporicidal wipes were introduced, but also as a but together with a very tough training regimen for staff on auditing on the use of wipes. So not only then, when you introduce a new regimen and using those type of a product to clean the surface proximal to patients, they do work, but only if you change practices as well on ensuring good practice. On this today, the first of its kind really clearly demonstrates that with the introduction of a good product, with good practice, we'll produce some very good results at the end of the day. Next slide, please. So what do we know about C. diff? And here I'm talking about the product formulation or different sporicidal products that are being sold at the moment around the world. As I mentioned earlier on, when we tested all those different wipes with claiming sporicidal activity, like a large number of those wipes did not contain a biocide that contained a sporicide. When we look in a bit more detail about the way tests are conducted by those companies to claim sporicidal activity, you will be surprised that some of those companies are using not the spores, but the vegetative form of Clostridium difficile. And as you might know, that Clostridium difficile is a strict anaerobic microorganism that will be killed just by the presence of oxygen. So therefore, the EPA has released a statement saying that the use of disinfectant product against C. difficile must be effective against the spore form and not the vegetative form. So that might be logical to you, but for a number of companies that claiming sporicidal activity, it is not. Now, the EPA also said that with C. diff, and as I mentioned before, it's very difficult to use because the strain don't readily sporulate to high population. So only very few lab will be able to really test for Clostridium difficile spores activity against biocides. Next slide, please. So as an example of what I was just saying about a product testing on being commercialized on product claim, this product C, claim was it achieved 100% kill of vegetative cells of Clostridium difficile. And they put that on the label as being active against Clostridium difficile. And when we're looking a bit more detailed at where those product was testing against the vegetative cells in this case, nowhere in the method it mentions that the test is conducted anaerobically. So basically what they were doing here, by just exposing the vegetative cells to normal environment, they were killing the cells with the oxygen, but not by the product. So it's why they had a 100% kill of vegetative cells. So this is an example of what you can find out there in terms of product claim, but it is not the only one. So again, when we're looking at a claim against Clostridium difficile spores, we've got to be very well aware of the test method on the claim made by companies. Next slide, please. So, sporicidal failure and incidence. And that's coming towards the end of my talk. Surviving sporicidal interventions. Well, hopefully I convince you that to achieve a spore kill, you need to have a high concentration of sporicide on a very long contact time. So that can be achieved with medical devices, such as endoscopes. And as I mentioned, there's no report of spores, resistance, or infections following medical devices disinfections. However, on this note, I've got to mention that failure of high-level disinfections used, for example, endoscopes disinfections has been documented with other microorganisms, but not with spores. Now, this makes a distinction with the surface disinfection, which is the other box, whereby high concentration is not usually achieved because the product you're using are usually toxic and highly corrosive. And the long contact time are not possible, and usually short contact time of very few minutes are probably the case, or even few seconds. So in that case, for surface disinfection, it is not very surprising, knowing the activity or the efficacy of sporicide, that those products will fail to kill most of the spores on those surface on those surfaces, because concentration is not achieved or contact times is not achieved. So you're going to have survival of spores and persistence of spores on those surfaces. Next slide, please. Now, in terms of looking at the risk associated with sporicide failure, what is the severity? With Clostridium difficile in mind, but the severity can be very high because they will increase treatment cost, hospital fare, obviously it will cause quite a number of deaths, especially in the elderly populations in the hospitals. What is the likelihood? For medical devices, it's very low. For environmental surfaces, as I demonstrated through this talk, it is quite high. Therefore, the risk of sporicide failure for environmental surfaces is quite high. Next slide, please. What does it mean? At the moment, it means that additional interventions are then needed in terms of increasing hygiene. Here we're talking about protective barrier, increasing hand hygiene, isolation rooms for patients with Clostridium difficile. We're talking about probably deep clean as well, using those vaporized hydrogen peroxide devices. And we're looking at long-term antibiotic chemotherapy as well for treating Clostridium difficile infections. Next slide, please. Therefore, ensuring efficacy for sporicide, what we need to look for, first of all, to have a clear understanding of the product limitations. And hopefully I convince you that the formulation itself is very important to understand, not only of the active ingredients, but how the product is made and what other excipients you've got in that product. We need to understand also the factors affecting activity in terms, especially the presence of, for example, soiling on the surfaces, how the product is being applied. On a recommendation for the manufacturers, the instructions on the limitation of the products need to be very clear on the label. And it is not the case at the moment, or for very, very few products. I haven't talked much about the ease of use of the product, but usually the best product are products that you avoid dilutions or make the use of an appropriate dispenser. If you're starting to have products that are very complex to use, then you might increase the problem associated with making the right dilutions. And if you don't make the right dilutions, especially for sporicide, as you know, you're going to decrease the activity. And finally, what will be nice for anyone looking at purchasing sporicidal product is to have an understanding of efficacy test protocols. Again, I'm trying to mention that through this talk, that the test protocols are very important, whether you've got suspension test or a surface test, or whether you're going to have a product that is contained within the wipes. The important things about knowing about efficacy test protocols is usually the best protocol is the one that match the product on the final application. So having a suspension test, for example, for using a product on surfaces is, in my view, not really appropriate. Next slide, please. So this really finishes this very, very brief but thorough overview and sometimes slightly complex a view of esporosol efficacy. Again, I would like to certainly thank Paul Weber on Satar for the invitations in giving that memorial teleclass lecture. Thank you very much for listening. Next slide, please, where you're going to have in that next slide the forthcoming teleclass. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you very much, Yair. This was a very informative presentation, and also appreciated that you finished within the time allocated. We do have a few minutes. May I use my prerogative and ask a question of Jaiv?
By all means,
Yeah, I know that there is an increasing discussion about the use of germinating chemicals to be applied as a part of the decontamination process, where the spores are encouraged to turn into a germinated form, eventually then to be made easier to kill. And I'm just wondering if you have any views on such an approach.
Yeah, I mean, this approach has been tested thoroughly in the 1980s and 1990s. It is a very interesting approach. However, the activity you will achieve by adding a germinant combined with the sporicide, you will still not achieve 100% a sporicidal kill. You're still going to achieve probably 80% of kill. It's been shown that not all the spores will germinate with those germinants at present. So unless we find a combination of germinants or a germinant that will work against those what I think Peter Stetlow mentioned as the superdormant spores, then it is going to be difficult to achieve quite a high rate of kill with that approach.
Thank you very much. So I would again like to thank Jaiv Mayard for his wonderful presentation and wish you all a very good day. Bye-bye.